AgriTalk is brought to you by Full Scale from Helena. Grow strong returns this season with breakthrough foliar nutrition from Full Scale at Reproduction. We have got a wide range of topics that we are going to get to today, and we'll find out if the carbon markets are developing the way that one of the innovators of the concept envisioned and where it might be headed next. We've got a big free-for-all coming your way.
Live from a commemorative Constitution Day via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk. Today it's the Friday free-for-all with panelists Roger Bernard, Tim Burrock, and Chris Gibbs. It's also the College Roadshow at Kansas State University, and we'll have a conversation with Dr. Chuck Rice of the Board on Agriculture and Natural Resources. Right after the news with Clinton Griffiths, we'll hear from Jennifer Scheich of Farm Journal's Pork. I'm producer Big Apple Joe Stackler, and now, the host of AgriTalk, because it's also Citizenship Day, Citizen Chip Flory.
Well done! Well done, Joe. Thank you so much, and welcome to today's first hour of AgriTalk. Glad that you could be with us today. And yeah, we've got a heck of a show. The guys have put together a heck of a list of topics that we want to cover because, as today's news guy knows, Clinton Griffiths,
yes, Ag
Day anchor, it has been an active week on the news front, hasn't it?
Oh, my gosh. Yes. And you know, we go through these ups and downs, a little ebb and flow of where there's a lot happening and then there's nothing happening. And there's been a lot happening this week. And so, yeah, it's just keeping up with it all has been a little bit of a challenge.
And it's happening as the House is out of,
right,
of Washington, okay? So take that as a reminder in the future to everybody out there that when the Senate leaves town and the House leaves town, it doesn't mean that the work stops. As a matter of fact, it means that it's time that the staffers can actually get something done is what it means.
That's right. There's a little less of a rodeo around them, and then they've got a time to, you know, do some work, which is always
right.
Nice. Let's get to some news, Chip, here so
absolutely
we can get you started on your way. Ag Secretary Tom Vilsack, he's out in Italy at the G20 meeting of ag ministers with the topic of trade in China under discussion. You remember that. The Biden administration conducting a review of the U.S.-China trade agreement, that phase one agreement. Vilsack on Thursday criticizing a provision in that agreement allowing China to make their purchases based on market conditions. He says it gives China the ability to use market conditions as a reason or an excuse to not get to a particular level, adding that China has obviously improved their purchases from where they were a couple of years ago, but the challenge is they aren't yet at the level agreed to in the phase one deal, Chip.
Boy, you go back 2 years ago, and the level that we got to in the 2020-21 marketing year,
mm-hmm,
I think there's nobody that would have said that's a bad deal.
Right.
You know, because the exports that we have sent to China, the ag exports we've sent to China in the last marketing year, we wouldn't be where we're at with prices right now if it wasn't for that.
Yeah, and I think it's interesting that the comments about market conditions. I'm not sure the U.S. would sign an agreement that wasn't based on market conditions. You know what
right
I'm saying? Like,
oh, absolutely.
At some point, if you don't need it, you shouldn't be forced to buy it. So I don't know. I'm sure there's more to this conversation and conversations he's having than just kind of a few choice words out of it. Meanwhile,
right,
Chip, China has formally applied to join that 11-nation CPTPP, the Trans-Pacific Partnership. You may remember that. The announcement comes that China will try to join that pact, initially championed as a counter to China, and it came the day after the administration unveiled a new security partnership with the UK and Australia.
I wonder if that means that the U.S. is going to now be looking to join that pact as well.
You know, it's a great question. I think there's no doubt that there's continuing to be conversations about it. You know, when I asked Vilsack about that during our town hall meeting last week,
he
said he doesn't think that there's an appetite for it in Congress at this time. He doesn't think he can get the trade approval for
maybe
it.
Maybe right. Maybe
and so
right. Yep.
He's basically putting it on the table, saying, hey, people want to focus on the U.S. economy right now. That's what we're going to focus on rather than looking at a bunch of other trade deals.
Yeah, it's got to be a priority. And if it's not, it's not.
Yeah, absolutely. Hey, Chip, one last story here before we move on to Jennifer. The first production, I'm going to see if you're going to get one of these. The first production Rivian R1T electric pickup truck rolling off the assembly line at the company's factory in Normal, Illinois, becomes the first electric truck to hit the market. That company started in 2019. The truck has a range of 314 miles, although you can upgrade that. The price tag starts for a cool $67,500, Chip.
Yeah. I wonder if that includes towing, hauling. You still get that 300 miles. I mean, you know, legitimate question, isn't it?
Well, that's my biggest question. You hook a gooseneck trailer to it, how far are you going to get hauling cattle to the sale barn? You know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah.
If it's 20 degrees outside, how far are you going to go?
Right.
I think there are real concerns from the ag and rural America perspective of how viable these are. And yeah, maybe it's nice to run to town and back, but other than that, how much of a work truck can it be?
Right. You know, and when it comes to the EVs, I used to have the attitude that if you're really going to use a vehicle, you're probably not going to get an EV. And then, you know, I went to a different part of the country, took a look. I saw several electric vehicles out there in commuter environment. So, I mean, there's a place for them. They're finding their way into those places. I just don't know if hauling cattle is one of those places.
Yeah, you know, maybe someday, but I think people are going to have to be convinced that that fits into their lifestyle.
That's right. All right, Clinton, thanks so much, buddy.
Absolutely, appreciate it.
All right, thank you for the help this week. Really appreciate it. Jennifer Shike, editor, Farm Journal's Pork. Good morning, Jennifer. How are you?
Good morning. I'm doing great. Thanks.
Good, good, good. Biosecurity. It's so important. We've been talking about it a lot. Let's keep the conversation going. What did your reporting on biosecurity look like this week?
Well, this week has been USDA's ASF Action Week, so it's been filled with great webinars every day this week talking about what's going on from a USDA standpoint as far as prevention and preparation for African swine fever. And we had a really good session on Wednesday where Dr. Clayton Johnson with Carthage Veterinary Service talked about biosecurity like defending a fortress. And I think sometimes it can be such a foreign and hard concept for people to really understand, but he put it into a perspective that I thought was really good. And starting with defining your perimeter first, because if you're going to defend your fortress, you've got to figure out what your perimeter is. And then he talks about limited points of entry and how important that is on our swine farms to have specific points of access for people and animals and those things that we bring into our farm. Because once we do that, we're better able to protect our farm from those risk factors that we maybe hope to either exclude or maybe sanitize to keep clean, or possibly things that we're just going to segregate and keep just on our different farms. So we're not bringing things back and forth.
Right, right. Jennifer, the thing that I like about your reporting on the biosecurity issues this week is it's showing that it's not just black and white. There's not just one plan that'll work. It's a concept. It's an attitude that you're going to do whatever it takes to keep those diseases off of your farm. Thank you, Jennifer. We'll talk to you later.
Thank you.
We got the free-for-all coming up next right here on AgriTalk.
AgriTalk is brought to you by Golden Harvest. Learn how Golden Harvest is changing the game in corn and soybean products and providing service to farmers by visiting goldenharvestseeds.com.
Farm Journal and the National FFA Foundation present the second annual Farm On Benefit Concert. Featuring country music star Easton Corbin, the concert will air on Monday, September 20 at 7 Central on RFD-TV. And your FFAer can be part of it. Just text a picture of them in their blue jacket with the words Farm On to 31313 or use the Farm On hashtag on social media. Join us for the hashtag Farm On Benefit Concert, September 20 at 7 p.m. on RFD-TV.
Find farm equipment on Machine Repeats September 21st auction. No reserve, no buyer fees. Start bidding now at auctions.machinerepeat.com. Brass Monkey.
Welcome back to AgriTalk. I am your host, Chip Flory. Thank you so much for joining us today. Don't forget, Monday, it's coming up Monday, September 20th, 7 p.m. Central Time on RFD. It is the Farm On Benefit Concert presented by Farm Journal and the National FFA Foundation. You got to help us out on this. Let's make it a real benefit for FFA. You can go to ffa.org/farmon to make a donation, or to make a $10 donation, you can text the word farm on, one word, farm on, to the number 20222. Help us out. Make it a success for FFA. Let's get this free-for-all started. Started off with Chris Gibbs. He is the chair of Rural Voices USA, and he is a farmer over in Ohio. Chris, welcome back to the free-for-all. How are you?
Hey, very good. Ohio's looking good. We're bearing down on harvest here in another week or so and ready to go.
Excellent. Excellent. I was going to ask you how things are looking. You still optimistic over that crop over there, Chris?
Yeah, we are. You know, beans look real good. We got some rains there just a couple weeks ago. You know, we took the top off of this corn. I think the moment that you guys walked out of the fields on the Pro Farmer Tour, we kind of headed south a little bit because we were 90, 92 degrees there for a couple, 3 weeks. And we took the top end off of that, yep. But then we got a little cooler and got some rain. So we're going to have a good crop. And, hey, the good news is I'm going to get to farm next year.
Yeah, amen to that. Amen to that. Love it.
That's always the goal.
Yeah, that's right. We've also got Iowa farmer Tim Burak on the line with us. Timmy, I just picked up a shower here. Has it made it your way yet?
No, I'm watching it just entering the county. So it'll kind of slow things up today.
Yeah, Tim, you were so dry mid-season this year. How's things looking?
I think they look really good now. I got a comment about Chris. When you walked out of the field, it started raining here.
Yeah.
On your tour. Right. So that really helped us. That came back and helped the beans, and I think it's going to have helped the corn a lot too.
Yeah. Yeah. There was some question whether or not that it was going to do any good for the corn, but I think you're right. I think it did. You stayed out of that bad wind that we had here about 3 weeks ago, didn't you?
I did. It was a mile and a half south of me, and then there was one that went north of me too, so I consider myself extremely fortunate to be in the slot.
Yeah. All right. Hey, we've got a lot that we want to cover. I'm going to kick it off with Roger Bernard from IHS Market. How are you, Raj?
Doing good, and I'd say the only thing better than Pro Farmer Crop Tour about getting rain across the Corn Belt is getting the Secretary of Agriculture to visit your dry state. That almost guarantees a rain.
That's right. If he shows up to make an announcement about drought aid, he's probably going to have an umbrella with him.
Probably. The easy ups come up, believe me.
Yep, that's right. Okay. Secretary Vilsack was on the show on Monday, made mention that he was making his way to Italy for the G20 Ag Ministers meeting. What has he learned, Roger?
Well, what he's going to be doing, we're going to see some series of things coming up now. He talked about this at this meeting that he had in Italy, the G20 meeting. Next week is the UN Food Systems Summit. That's where the U.S. is going to advance what they are calling a new coalition, which is seeking to focus on sustainability as a strategic action priority. They're calling it the Coalition for Action for Sustainable Productivity, Growth, and Food Security and Resource Conservation. I ain't even going to begin to try to come up with the acronym for that one. But they're going to really launch that one with a goal of getting it on tap by the COP26 in November. Now, what they're focusing on, and this is very interesting, it's sustainability, but what you can read between the lines on this is really aimed at taking on farm to fork, the EU policy, that limits pesticide use, et cetera, that takes land out of production. Vilsack is trying to send some very strong signals back home from Italy on this. He said, basically, there's multiple ways to get to this goal of sustainability. We want to do this in the way that's most comfortable for farmers. Our system, he says, is already incentive, market-based, and based on voluntary actions, utilizing programs farmers are familiar with. So he's trying to ease concerns already. I think after stepping in the stepped up basis issue, this could make it a lot tougher sell when he comes into, bringing this up. Interestingly, he said he did not raise this with the EU ag minister when he met with him earlier this week. So this is what we're starting to see now coming out of this administration relative to their thoughts, their plans on sustainability, climate smart agriculture, et cetera. They're really playing up that they're going to use what's out there now. Not necessarily saying you got new technologies that will be there.
So what we're doing is talking about taking the sustainability conversation instead of a domestic conversation. It becomes an international conversation at that point. And Chris, is that the right approach?
Well, let's certainly we like to see engagement with our allies. That's something that we probably missed in the last administration. So any engagement with our allies to at least be at the table is good news. But I'm going to tell you something. From a farmer standpoint, just from me and other farmers, the first word in sustainability is economic sustainability.
Yeah.
Not worrying about conservation on down the line. Those are important. But sustainability to me means whatever I do, whatever practice I put on the land, whatever program I participate in, USDA program or otherwise, RMA program, it has to be economically sustainable to me, or I'm not going to be around
to have a
conservation program.
That's a great point, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Tim? It's got to start with that.
Yes, it does. And I'm thankful for Chris making those comments. There's been some real concerns about this farm to fork initiative. And when you study that and you look at how the European farmer is going to be farming in the future, the government involvement would be very scary for me at that level.
Yeah. Well, Tim, it's hard enough to come up with a policy that works for every farmer in Fayette County. What are we getting into if we would all of a sudden say, okay, this is going to work for a farmer in Germany and in Fayette County, Iowa? I don't know how that all comes together, Roger. Is that kind of the concept that we're seeing at work here?
Well, where they're looking at, they're not looking to Europe to come in on this one because of the farm to fork. They're looking at countries they think like Canada, Mexico, maybe South America. Now, Vilsack said he did talk some about it to Brazil. They're interested, but they haven't signed on yet. This thing's got a lot more fleshing out of details, for any of these countries to really sign on. And all, it's just like at the WTO, the more people you get involved, the harder it's going to be to get a single view on this. But that farm to fork strategy, at least, is a pretty good target to take aim at, because EU has laid it out there, organics, et cetera. And I'm not casting dispersions on any of that, but
right.
I totally agree with Tim and company. Boy, the heavy-handed role of government in the EU is much, much different than what I think is going to unfold here. Other thing, too, our policy situation really evolves differently. Mr. Vilsack can do a lot of this, but he's going to have to get Congress to buy in, because don't forget, our policy, farm policy, starts in Congress and then is handed to the administration to implement. It's not the other way around.
Well, yeah, it starts in Congress, and I guess that's our jump over to the reconciliation bill. Tim, I'm going to start with you. The Republicans in the House Ag Committee are not very happy with the way that this is being handled, are they?
Well, they don't appear to be, and I guess you probably can't blame them since they had absolutely no input into it. And then there's $28 billion that is still unaccounted for. Part of that is the conservation title. So it doesn't look good at all. The bipartisanship, the traditional agricultural unity just doesn't even seem to exist anymore, even for ag now.
Yeah, Chris, even some of the Democrats on the House Ag aren't satisfied with how this is being handled.
No, they aren't. But you know what? Let's go for the low hanging fruit here. Let's go for a win. Let's get this infrastructure bill across the table. The Speaker Pelosi has committed to a vote on this on the 27th of September. I've got that date pinned on my calendar. I even put it in my phone as Pelosi vote and on my Google calendar. I'm looking to that. She committed to that. Let's get the low-hanging fruit. Let's get that over the finish line, and let's get something done for agriculture. Infrastructure is what we can do right now.
Okay. When we come back, I can't believe that we're to a break already here. We got one more segment left, guys. I want to start with that. Roger, what are the odds that we will see a vote on the physical infrastructure bill by or on September 27? That's where we're picking up on the free-for-all next.
Time for Markets Now with the experts from Pro Farmer.
Joining us now, Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady. Geez, Beige, a lot of negative changes in the grains and livestock markets today.
Yeah, and you know, Chip, I think it goes beyond that. It's quite a bit of risk off day as we look across the asset-based markets today. The stock market's under pressure. Commodities in general are under pretty heavy pressure here, and so the grain and soy markets are getting caught up in that, and the biggest one caught up in it is the soy complex. Soy oil under heavy pressure, though off its earlier lows, and the same is the case with the soybean market. That's having an influence on both corn and the wheat markets. Spring wheat futures are trying to do their best to hold off all this pressure, but you know, just quite a bit of negative downside movement here this morning.
Okay, real quick, there was another soybean export sale announcement this morning, right?
Yeah, 132,000 metric tons to China. So, you know, we've had the kind of volleyball back and forth with the cancellations earlier in the week, and then they had purchases yesterday, the same amount, and then purchases again today. But they've also been in for Brazilian beans earlier in the week.
Right. You know, we had such a big move to the upside yesterday in the hog market. I was sure hoping for follow-through today.
Yeah, you know, still working on weekly gains, but they are pulling back amid that the broader risk off that I talked about earlier on to lead off with. And you know, the same is the case with the cattle market. We had the nice rebound from the multi-month low earlier in the week, and now we're pulling back some into the weekend and just not showing a whole lot of movement, net movement for the week there.
Yeah, you know, but the week started off with what could have been a catastrophe with that fire at JBS in Grand Island, and we've seemed to have dodged that bullet. Thanks, Beige. Have a great weekend. That's Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady on Markets Now.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors. Farm Journal and the National FFA Foundation present the second annual Farm On Benefit Concert, featuring country music star Easton Corbin on September 20th at 7 Central on RFD-TV.
Welcome back. Let's keep the ball rolling with this free-for-all. We've got Roger Bernard, Chris Gibbs, and Tim Burrock on with us today. Roger, at the end of the last segment, Chris took us to the reconciliation bill, or I guess I took us there. We got a comment from Chris and Tim. Chris has got September 27th circled for a vote on the physical infrastructure bill. Is it going to happen?
That one, I think it's iffy even at this stage. Yes, I know Pelosi committed to it. They got that and be able to move forward, you know, on what else they wanted to do. But the progressives in the Democratic Party are just not going to go along with it until that social infrastructure package is ready. And they got to get a lot further down the road before those, progressives are going to, I think, be willing to go along with the physical infrastructure package. Then, of course, you bring the moderate Democrats into the mix who say, well, we ain't going to vote on social without getting the infrastructure package. So, it's hard to bet against Pelosi.
It is.
But the same token, there's a lot of moving parts here.
Yeah, a lot of moving parts is right. Tim, how the spending is going to be paid for looks a lot different coming out of the House in this reconciliation bill than what was in the Biden plan, wouldn't you say?
Well, it does. And it looks like some of the issues agriculture had, you know, with capital gains is improved. The estate tax is still there. But Chip, a general comment.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm told that this bill could be 10,000 pages when they're done. Yeah. You could see how the Ag Committee markup went. And they're going to try and pass this on the 27th, if they even get close. Maybe it's the 30th, maybe it's, who knows what the actual date is. No one will have read it. This is Obamacare all over, only that was only 2,500 pages. And how are we losing our minds? Is the country's lost its mind?
Okay, I'll throw that over to Chris. Chris, when you look at this whole package, are we losing our mind?
Well, let's call it like it is. We're not going to be at 3.5. It's going to be far less than that. There's plenty of senators out there, Manchin. You just run a whole list, Sinema, the whole nine yards. They're not going to let that go. You know, what I want to do, again, go back to the infrastructure package. You always say no. The path to yes is always goes through no in hard negotiations. So I'm a little bit more optimistic on the 27th. One thing I will say for agriculture, that the infrastructure package that the administration missed is infrastructure for biofuels.
Yeah.
I call this a Jetsons moment, a Jetsons moment. We're not going to end up with flying cars. We're also not going to end up with electric vehicles, all 100% in 10 or even 15 years. I just counted on my farm this year, 23 gasoline and diesel engines, plus my airplane with two. So those aren't going away in the next 20 or 25 years.
Right.
So we need an infrastructure package that includes our biofuels as a transition fuel to get to EVs. That was completely missing. The White House missed the mark.
Yeah, Tim, I got to believe you agree with that one.
I agree with that. They did miss it, and it's too bad. And I don't know if anybody's trying to – oh, I know people are trying to, you know, the renewable fuels trying to get it in. But on a announcement that Ford made today, Ford said we're going to spend another $250 million, hire another 600 people to build the F-150 Lightning. So as much as I've listened to the EV conversation this morning, evidently there's still demand there that's coming.
There is demand, and they've got to prove their concept is what they've got to do with the electric vehicles. And proving the concept means, Roger, it means putting some of these vehicles on the road and making it happen, right?
That's right. And here's the other thing. You put these vehicles on dirt roads, there's a whole bunch of other issues that come up. Okay, that there's all kinds of shielding and everything else. I know of people that don't have EVs, but they've got the hybrids. Mm-hmm. Once a year, those vehicles have to go into the dealer and get all the dust and all the gravel, dirt, and grime cleaned out from underneath those. And you just imagine how many farm pickups are going to end up in the shop every year or even every 6 months.
Right.
Trying to get those types of things done. Those things haven't even been talked about at all. Yeah. Relative to getting these things across the whole country. And I do want just tweak a little bit. The it's new EVs, you know, only not, you know, non-combustion engines new after 2030 or 2035. That means we've still got internal combustion engines that are going to be there, and tractors, et cetera, you're a long ways off from those being EVs.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Okay. I feel like we need to move on to a couple of other issues here. And Chris, I want to touch one that you brought up before the show. What are you seeing for input prices on 2022 crops?
Well, you know, obviously farmers are extremely sensitive to this because of natural gas going up. That's going to affect nitrogen. Potash, triple superphosphate, all those are going up. I keep watching this. From is it truly inflation? Is it black swan events in these supply chains? Or is it just the market chasing more gross dollars per acre? And my gut is that much of the inflation input prices is just the suppliers chasing what they see as more gross dollars in agriculture. When we got $5 corn at 220 bushel, they're saying, you know what, there's more money there for us. And unfortunately, farmers are actually pretty good at saying, well, I'm satisfied with a set amount and let everybody else take the rest. We got to quit that. We got to get our share.
I love that. That's a good point. Tim, I know you're concerned about these the natural gas prices too.
I am. And I am right with Chris. And is it man-made? Is it a natural thing? What is driving natural gas to $5, which then drives all our other costs? And here's the concerning issue is the number of companies that are announcing they're shutting down their fertilizer production. Now it's in Europe. You know, we've got one down at the Gulf here because of the storm. But all that matters down the road.
Yep.
It's a big deal down the road.
Absolutely. Here's one of the reasons, and we talked with Phil Flynn, energy analyst at Price Futures Group, earlier this week. Here's one of the big reasons that that natty gas prices are where they're at. We don't have the production back online. We're still at about 50% out of the Gulf of Mexico. Here's the deal. New Orleans didn't flood when Hurricane Ida went through, and nobody is focused on the real damage that was done by Hurricane Ida. We don't have the gas and oil production out of the Gulf even close to where it was. Look at what's going on at the export facilities. Roger, we're still working to get that those export facilities back up and online, right?
Absolutely, yeah. And when you don't have power, it's kind of hard to, you know, unload ships and things like that. And, you know, you're exactly right. We still have, coming out of the Gulf of Mexico, 40% of the Gulf of Mexico natural gas is still offline.
Yep.
Now, you know, that's it's only a portion of our U.S. production, but that's still a pretty important portion of our production. So I think the supply chain is there, but this Hurricane Ida has caused a lot more issues than I think anybody imagined that it did and could, especially grain loading facilities, you name it, up, you know, in that Gulf area. Boy, this is really a mess down there.
Right. Right. Okay. I think we've got time for one more subject.
I'm more cynical.
Yeah. Okay. Okay, Chris, why? Why are you most cynical on that?
Well, I'm more cynical because, you know, suppliers, it looks to me, and again, this is Debbie Downer cynical, but it looks to me like we're following the OPEC/JBS model. Shut down your processing, shut down your end use, and profits go up.
Yeah. Okay.
I'm being grumpy.
That's okay. You're entitled to be grumpy. That's fine. That's fine. I'm going to ask you the question, Chris, that you asked before the show started. Why is Vilsack the only advocate out there for the Biden ag and rural policy?
And you know, that's really something. He shows up at the White House press briefing to talk about food supply issues and food price increases, which is the fourth rail of politics. If gas prices are going up and food prices are going up, you're in trouble politically. But you know what? They have left open all of the state Farm Service Agency directorships and state committees. All of that has never even been filled or talked about being filled, and left the Trump people in there for a long time. Those people could be advocates in states for the Build Back Better plan and explain it on the ground to the news media in states, real people, real farmers. They've missed that opportunity. Just plain old-fashioned missed it.
Yeah, interesting.
Yep. You don't have the people, you can't talk about the policy, and people drive policy, Chip. I know, as Jim has long said, and I've held that view too. And there's not the people in this administration. We still don't have Undersecretary for Foreign Ag and Trade. We've got the nominee for farm production and conservation, but no hearing yet, no confirmation yet. So, you don't have the people, it's hard to do it.
Exactly. I asked Secretary Vilsack about that position, the foreign trade undersecretary position, and he almost kind of bristled at me for even asking the question, Roger. He said, hey, it's not like the job isn't getting done. The job is getting done. Yeah. Guys, you were great. Thank you so much for the time this morning. Really appreciate it. That wraps up the free-for-all. We're heading to K-State for the College Roadshow next.
AgriTalk is brought to you by Golden Harvest. Learn how Golden Harvest is changing the game in corn and soybean products and providing service to farmers by visiting goldenharvestseeds.com.
Welcome back to AgriTalk. I am your host, Chip Flory. Glad that you could join us. It is the College Roadshow, the Farm Journal College Roadshow, and we are at Kansas State University. Watch for the full coverage this weekend on U.S. Farm Report. And as part of the College Roadshow, we're having a conversation right now with Dr. Charles Rice. He specializes in soil microbiology, carbon cycling, climate change. Internationally, Dr. Rice was a member of the United Nations Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change that received the Nobel Peace Prize in 2007. Dr. Rice, welcome to AgriTalk.
Well, thank you.
You bet. Okay, so the carbon markets, obviously getting so much attention right now. Are they developing as you expected?
Yeah, I guess so. We actually, back in the early 2000s, I was involved in looking at carbon markets, how to monitor, verify, and develop those. And that kind of went away in the mid to late 2000s, and now there's been a resurgence in the last couple of years, partly because there's companies engaging in carbon reduction strategies and policy, and maybe because there's some more apparent effects of climate change on weather.
Okay. The efforts that we are putting in place to capture carbon, do they work?
Well, certainly, yes. Well, we know that there are ag management practices like less tillage, minimal disturbance, no-till being the prime example. Mm-hmm. We know that that stores more carbon than soils. But you can enhance that even further and should be enhancing it further with crop rotations and cover crops, adding compost or manure when that's available. All those are adding carbon to the soil, and because of minimum disturbance, is keeping it in the soil. So those practices are fairly well known. Also, I guess, in the case of CRP, other practices that are, that are like permanent vegetation would also provide that root material that's going into the soil and then supplying carbon to be stored in it.
Okay, so if we're putting more carbon into the soil, we're improving soil health, correct?
Yeah, and that's the beauty of this. You know, the idea that taking CO2, putting into the soil as organic carbon, organic matter, then you're improving soil health. I have my three principles I call the Holy Trinity of soil health, and that's the one key component is organic matter, organic carbon, and then soil structure and microbial activity. Those three interact together. So carbon is the food for the microbes. The microbes help build soil structure, and carbon is stored inside those soil aggregates, and that's right. where disturbance is key, or lack of disturbance.
Yeah, the lack of disturbance. How well do you think these concepts are understood, Dr. Rice? I mean, we've been working on it and talking about it, it seems like, for so long. And how well accepted is the concept?
The concept of carbon sequestration, I think it's well-supported, and soils can store carbon. There's some people that question how long, if you go back and till it, then you might lose your carbon. Those are some important questions. But, I think the principles of adding organic matter to soil, carbon to soil, is pretty well established. The question is how you monetize it or get credit for it through carbon markets. And there's a lot of variations, controversy about how you go about how you go about doing that.
Right. Well, you know, we've got the innovators out there, the guys that have been doing no-till or minimum till and cover crops for a long time, that these markets really aren't designed for them, are they?
Well, no, that's, and yeah, that's one of the early, unfortunate things. Early adopters are not going to get credit. Depends on how they do the structure of the markets. Some markets are going back a few years, give some credit, but if you've been no-tilling for 30 years, you're not likely going to get carbon credits, because they're looking at additional carbon in recent history that's being taken out of the atmosphere. So it's really how they structure those markets and the monitoring.
You know, I think the argument that many are making is that, hey, these guys are innovators. They're not going to stop innovating just because they've accomplished what they have. They will figure out the next step. What do you think that next step looks like?
Well, yeah. So, you know, it's not all about carbon markets. It's improving your soil. So those early innovators have already started improving their soils. So they say no-tilling, but then what's the next steps? Okay, now you can add cover crops. And across the United States, we talk a lot about cover crops, but it's only probably about 10% of the acreage is in cover crops. So it's adding cover crops. And then it's adding crop rotation, crop diversity, looking at can we develop deeper root systems? Can we breed plants, crops, to have deeper root systems? So there's additional opportunities to store carbon, even though if you've been no-tilling for 20, 30 years.
Okay. All right. Real quick, is it going to matter in the climate change battle?
So, yeah, I think so. We're actually working on a study where can we develop a carbon neutral or carbon negative agriculture, and soil carbon sequestration would, some of the numbers say that up to 50% of the carbon emissions or greenhouse gas emissions from agriculture can be offset through soil carbon sequestration.
Okay.
Now that's a significant number.
Oh, you're right. That is a significant number. Thank you so much, Dr. Rice. That is Dr. Chuck Rice. He's an agronomy professor there at K-State. We're going to continue the College Roadshow this afternoon. Come back. We've got Glenn Townsend taking a deep dive into the cattle markets.